Today's episode is brought to you by Locker Room, the free audio-only social media platform for sports fans. Start or join ongoing conversations, watch games together, react to the biggest news, rumors, and games. I'll be hosting rooms every week, so make sure to download the iOS app and join me to talk Warriors, and join David to talk about the Heat.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, it's Locked On Warriors on a Thursday. I'm Wes Goldberg, Warriors beat writer for the Mercury, and he's doing a crossover episode with David Ramil, the host of Locked On. He's my co-host over at Locked On NBA on Tuesdays, so if you guys aren't listening to that, be sure to do so. And we're here previewing Thursday's game between the Warriors and Heat in Miami. And the last time these teams played, David, the Warriors won 120-112 in overtime. That game on February 17th. For Golden State, Kent Bazemore came off the bench for 26 points. Steph Curry had 25 points, including the dagger three-pointer in overtime. The Heat, that was one of their rare games where they had both Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo earlier in the year, even though Goran Dragic did not play. The Warriors did not have Draymond Green in that game. So now that we're caught up, David, how have the Heat changed since February 17th?
Well, you'll get a taste of it on Thursday when they rolled out Victor Oladipo, presumably for the first time this season. That's the expectation right now. We're recording this on a Wednesday afternoon. He won't be available against the Indiana Pacers when the Heat play them in Indiana on Wednesday night. But returning home on Thursday, Oladipo is expected to be available. So that'll be the biggest change. Since then, well, they've been up and down. There's nothing consistent as far as this whole season has been concerned with Miami, but over the last couple of weeks or even that month-long period since they played the Warriors last, they've had their run where they went and won 11 out of 12 games, and then they lost six straight after that, and now they're back on a winning streak, I guess. They've won one game as of our recording this, and they seem to have turned some things around in terms of their defense has been much more consistent. So if there's one thing that you can look to regarding Miami, it's probably their defensive effort has been great because of Jimmy's return, because of the stability that it provides in defensive end. But they also have turned over their roster. They've made some minor changes here and there. They brought in Trevor Ariza, who's going to be the starter for this team. So it's been a very strange season for Miami, and you'll be witness to that.
It feels like both teams have kind of done that dance all season long, right? Win a few, lose a few. Is this team great? Is this team bottoming out? What's going on? Fans freak out, right? I mean, I think both you and I, we've had conversations about this offline several times, or even on the Locked On NBA show, just sort of discussing the reactions that we've seen and had with fans, right? And both teams have sort of been, it's been kind of hard to make out what they realistically are this year, but we're kind of getting to the point with 25 or so games left where maybe this is just what they are. I mean, where are you on the Heat right now?
I've been pretty consistent. I've been one of the more optimistic voices of Heat media and Heat fandom or Heat Twitter or whatever you want to call it, because I feel like there's been a lot of jumping the ship, a lot of desperation there. It started off so badly for Heat fans because the summer, or offseason rather, began with this, you know, this incredible run from the finals and expectations they were just going to keep building on that. And then you start hearing the potential rumor of making an offseason trade for Giannis Antetokounmpo. Of course, Warriors fans all too familiar with that prospect as well. And then they're dismayed when he signs the Supermax. Well, then they kind of put all their eggs in the other, or all their dominoes in the James Harden basket. And then you start focusing on acquiring James Harden, and then that falls through because you're not willing to include Tyler Hero, or you don't have enough draft picks. There's conflicting reports about that. And so there's this up and down crescendo, even from a team building perspective, that is just has left the fans kind of, again, very disappointed in the season and about their long-term prospects, or as far as the finals run is concerned. I really think that they've addressed whatever weaknesses they had. And as long as you have a player like Jimmy Butler, who's still, in my opinion, a top 10-15 player, a guy like Bam Adebayo who can do so much, and as long as you continue to get some solid performances here and there from guys like Goran Dragic, Tyler Hero, and anybody else you bring in, and now you have potentially a third star in Victor Oladipo, you can make a deep run in the playoffs. I think you can advance to the NBA Finals if everything breaks right. Now, it has to be perfect because you're going up against supremely more talented teams in Philadelphia, Milwaukee, and Brooklyn, certainly. But I think from Miami's side of things, they still view themselves as a title contender this year.
I think for the Warriors, Well, that's great for Miami. For the Warriors, they don't have those expectations. And I thought that was pretty apparent in Bob Myers' post-trade deadline press conference. And he was asked point blank, really, what are the expectations realistically for the team this season? And, you know, they talked about, you know, make the play-in, maybe, you know, avoid being a 9-10 seed in the play-in, hopefully be a 7 or 8 seed and make some noise, right? The old make some noise in the playoffs line. That's really what we're talking about. And look, when you've got Steph Curry, I suppose anything is possible. And I think it's pretty remarkable that even these Warriors are hovering around 500. And that really has a lot to do with how good Steph Curry has been this year. You look at his numbers, very reminiscent of, you know, unanimous MVP season type stats, right?
Right.
And but beyond him, you know, Draymond Green is in a much different phase of his career than he was half a decade ago. Andrew Wiggins is Andrew Wiggins. He's playing the best basketball of his career, but isn't the guy who you can rely on to take over for large swaths of the game. Kelly Oubre started the season in a rough patch, but has been good overall for them, though not as efficient as you know, what they're used to out of that position, given that Klay Thompson is out with an Achilles tear. And then the depth just doesn't really exist for this team. And I think that's the biggest difference between the Heat and the Warriors is that the Heat have guys like Trevor Ariza and, you know, other guys coming off the bench. I'm blanking on other depth pieces. Or Andre Iguodala, you know, these guys who can come off the bench and give you real solid minutes. Goran Dragic comes off the bench for them. Where the Heat, or I'm sorry, the Warriors are sort of like, hopefully Jordan Poole is something, you know? And he is. Right. He's been good for them. But I think if you really look up and down the roster, how many guys do trust in the playoffs on this Warriors team? 4, 5, maybe? Where I think with Miami, you could realistically say that there's 6, 7, 8 guys, probably closer to 7 or 8 guys that you trust in a playoff series. And I know that most of my listeners right now, they understand where I come from, and they probably think I'm a Heat homer right now. But I'm just stating the facts. And that's not to say that the Warriors can't get those guys. They're just very much in the rebuilding stage, and one of their most important guys is out for the season.
Well, I made this point, something echoing similarly to what you're saying, during the NBA Finals, you know, where everybody was making that kind of clear-cut comparison. It's like, well, the Lakers have the top two players. Like, yeah, on paper, they are the best two players in a vacuum, absolutely, even in the in context of the Finals. But then you have Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo not far behind him. And the reality with that team was that you could have, at that point before Goran Dragic got hurt, he was certainly capable of putting up a 30-point night in the context of a 7-game series. And that would make him, at least for one night, at least a top two, maybe top three player, as far as the when you stack both rosters up against one another. And that's what Miami had. They had that depth where you had a hero explosion, certainly as a potential option and during a, one game to another. You had Goran Dragic. You had other players, Jay Crowder at that point, who could step up and hit really big shots. And so maybe, again, on paper, they don't have the most talented team, but they have players that can conveniently step up in key situations that help them, you know, propel them to a victory. So Miami's depth has been a little inconsistent because of health and safety protocols and injury and everything else. And now with the recent trades, it's a little, I mean, you, Heat fans are not as optimistic about the depth because we just haven't seen it during the course of the season. But my expectation is that they'll be able to find some kind of stability now that the trade deadline has passed. Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson in particular, you could see the burden of having to prove themselves before the trade deadline and with every shot that they were taking, open shots that they would have absolutely hit last season. This season, they just weren't falling because they were just so much pressure on them knowing that their names were included in trades for other key players mm-hmm. like Kyle Lowry and stuff like that. So I think that pressure's off of them now and you can see a much more familiar version of the Heat.
Yeah, and I think for the Warriors, where they're at now is still a pretty good spot, right? Steve Kerr said to media today that he thinks that they're, and has said this over the last couple weeks, he thinks that they're ready to go on a run. James Wiseman is now a permanent part of the starting lineup as center. He's coming off of probably the best two-way game of his, you know, young career. You've got guys like Andrew Wiggins and Kelly Oubre very much selling to their roles. Oubre's still on the team after the trade deadline, which we'll hit here in a moment. Steph Curry obviously doing what it is that he does, and if they've been holding out their best basketball, which Steve Kerr thinks that they are, and maybe that's the same thing with the Heat. We're ready for a really great game, just like the first one we had on February 17th, a nice overtime game. Maybe we're ready to get another great game Thursday night in Miami.
Heat fans look to that game as one of the low points, if not the lowest point of the season. By the way.
Oh, interesting. That was one of the high points for Warriors fans. Funny how that works.
It was an overtime loss. It was the whole thing about the West Coast road trip too. They were in that 7-game trip that was the longest franchise history, and so Heat fans were staying up till 1 o'clock in the morning only to watch them crap the bed in the fourth quarter, and then have to go into overtime and watch Kent Bazemore of all people sink their hopes. So that was a particularly tough loss to swallow.
You mentioned the trade deadline. We kind of talked around it. I want to get your thoughts on what happened at the trade deadline, and for both teams, moreover, what didn't happen at the trade deadline. We'll talk about that next. But first, I'm excited to tell you about a new podcast I think you're really going to love, and it's called Death at the Wing. It's a sports documentary podcast hosted by Adam McKay, the writer and director of The Big Short, Vice, and Anchorman. I mean, if you haven't heard of those, you've been living under a rock for the last 20 years. It's 1980s basketball, saw players like Magic Johnson and Dr. J becoming household names, bringing a faster and flashier style of play that captivated TV audiences. But along the way to wealth and stardom, the excess of the 80s took its toll on the next generation of basketball, and never in the history of any sport have we seen so many who were ready to become stars face tragic deaths in such short of a time frame. McKay is joined by sports journalists and experts who lived through these moments in history to explore this overlooked phenomenon and the web of social, political, and cultural forces at play. I don't know. I think everybody was just completely captivated by The Last Dance and all these things, and over the pandemic. And when you get an opportunity to look back and sort of reframe things like that that happened in the 80s and the 90s, especially in the NBA, where just so much has happened over the last, 50 years that have changed the game. It just seems like there's inflection points happening every decade. This was one of those inflection points. What happened in the 80s, it was certainly a low point for the NBA, but just as important a point in NBA history as anything else. So I think if you like that kind of stuff, if you love The Last Dance or 30 for 30, I think you're going to love Death at the Wing. Search for Death at the Wing wherever you get podcasts to start listening. Get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with the new Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get podcasts. David, I mentioned the trade deadline. So the big news for both of these teams, right, were that the Heat were rumored to be in the running for Kyle Lowry, maybe the number one potential destination for Kyle Lowry. They did not pull the trigger on that trade for whatever reason. The Warriors, speculation about whether or not they would trade Kelly Oubre there for weeks leading up to the deadline. Ultimately, they do not move Kelly Oubre. Let's start with the Heat. What were your impressions of what didn't happen for them at the deadline?
Well, I was resigned to them acquiring Lowry. It seemed like it was almost virtually a done deal. And I think the expectation was actually that they were going to acquire both Lowry and Oladipo. So they only wound up getting half of that prospect. But the Lowry deal falling through, I thought it was a good move because you're looking at, from a defensive standpoint, Miami's guard position is particularly weak. Tyler Hero, Kendrick Nunn, Goran Dragic, the three guys that kind of alternate as a quote-unquote point guard position, aren't particularly good defensively. You bring in a guy like Lowry with championship experience, a defensive acumen, big shot scoring.
What was the rumored deal? It would be Duncan Robinson. They were never going to include Tyler Hero, right, if they were going to get Lowry. That much had been out there.
I don't buy any of that. Reportedly, they were unwilling to include Hero. I think it was just they realized that they weren't going to accept a deal without Hero, and they kind of put it publicly out there that he was never included in any package. I don't buy that for a second.
Okay, fair. Well, they weren't, but they were never going to trade Hero for Kyle Lowry. Like, that never made sense for them.
That was probably a little bit too rich.
Yeah. I mean, to give up a guy as young as Hero for somebody as good as Lowry, but 35 years old, Kyle Lowry is something like that.
The draft assets for Miami weren't particularly great, so it's not like they have a lot of picks to include. So you're looking at throwing in matching salary, Andre Iguodala, Kelly Olynyk, et cetera. And then if you're still trying to put together or cobble some deal together for Oladipo as well, if Hero's name comes up, I think at this point you kind of have to explore it and realize that you're just pivoting from this youth movement. And look, it's Pat Riley. I mean, he traded Caron Butler in his third year. Lamar Odom, who he had just signed as a restricted free agent the year before, he traded him for Shaquille O'Neal towards the end of his career. And it wound up leading to our championship in 2006.
Shaq was still MVP caliber. I mean, he was in the MVP race that first year in Miami. I don't think Kyle Lowry is even close to that, I would imagine, I think that it was the right decision for them not to include Hero. And if it was just Duncan Robinson, I actually think it was a mistake of Toronto not to do that. Because even if you can get Duncan Robinson, who's a fine player, you at least get something for nothing. And it feels like, to me, Masai Ujiri, on the cusp of his own free agency, by the way, didn't want to get fleeced in a deal months before he was ready to sign his next contract. That was at least my impression, because I do think it was a mistake, because Kyle Lowry's going to walk. I mean, he's gone in free agency more likely than not, right? He's either going to, and he might end up in Miami anyway. And you might get, you might end up with Victor Oladipo and Kyle Lowry and Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson without, and not having to give up any of those guys, right? Because you could presumably re-sign, if you're the Heat, Victor Oladipo, because I think you have his bird rights, right? And so you can,
you do.
Even though he's going to be a free agent. So you could bring in Kyle Lowry and then go over the cap and use bird rights to sign Victor Oladipo and keep both of them with all those other guys we're talking about. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is the dream scenario. You know, you were hoping for Giannis Antetokounmpo, doesn't happen, and then you somehow wind up falling ass backwards into this incredible team-building movement. So, yeah.
And Kyle Lowry can actually perform in the playoffs, unlike Giannis. So there's that. for the Warriors, again,
kind of anticlimactic, right? I mean, you thought you thought changes were coming, and it did not happen.
Well, changes did come, David. They traded Brad Wanamaker and Marquise Chriss.
Sorry,
cap
space. I know that was a lot of movement there on the trade deadline.
They got the draft
scale,
rights.
That was pretty high.
They got the draft rights of a guy who plays in like Korea and was drafted in the second round in 2015. So you know, could be a hidden
light years.
Gem.
Light years,
absolutely light years. I think, just like I think it was a mistake for the Raptors not to trade Kyle Lowry, I do ultimately think it'll be a mistake for the Warriors not to have traded Kelly Oubre. I think there chances are that he's gone in free agency. I'm not going to say it's 100% that he's gone. My sense is that he's probably gone. There's just so many teams. I mean, we mentioned Giannis having signed the extension, where that left teams like Miami. If Miami's going to use their cap space to go sign Kyle Lowry and bring back Victor Oladipo, then I don't know who the free agents are that anybody wants. Kelly Oubre is going to get paid. I mean, just because of supply and demand, David. And I think you have teams out there like Dallas and New Orleans and New York and Atlanta, some of these other teams that have tons of cap space that can offer Kelly Oubre a starting job potentially, where the Warriors probably aren't going to be able to do that. And they are going to be in a position, I think, where they end up risking that Kelly Oubre probably walks away and they don't get anything for him. Now, they could do some things like sign-and-trades and stuff like that. But, again, if he's going to a team with cap space, they have no incentive to facilitate a sign-and-trade and lose anything when they could just sign Oubre outright.
Do you get a sense that they want to re-sign him?
I think they would prefer to re-sign him at the right cap figure. I think they have a dollar amount in mind. And if it exceeds that, then he's going to go. But he's basically said he could do more than come off the bench. He would like to be a starter, and you can't blame him. He spent most of his career coming off the bench, broke through as a starter last year in Phoenix. I strongly doubt he wants to return to the bench. He's said as much as that. And the Warriors just can't offer him a starting job. And I've heard people say, oh, we'll just start him over Andrew Wiggins. Andrew Wiggins would be a great sixth man anyway. All right, cool. You tell Joe Lacob the guy he's paying $31 million to is coming off the bench. You know?
He doesn't exactly fit the profile of your typical six man too, right? He's not ignitable that way as an offensive player.
Right. Oubre would actually, you know, in some respects be better than that. And again, he probably doesn't want to do that. Now the Warriors will approach him about it. They're aware of it. You know, Bob Myers has said that he's talked to his agent about it. I just think it's slim. And this is not actual reporting necessarily, but it's an educated guess, I should say. I think that something fell through at the trade deadline that was related to the Kyle Lowry trade that never happened. And I think the Warriors had a deal in place that would have sent Kelly Oubre elsewhere, would have gotten some sort of return. Now, I have no idea what that return would be, but I think they would have gotten something for Kelly Oubre. But when Kyle Lowry ultimately was not moved by Toronto, I think Golden State was somehow involved in that, and it didn't work out. And their backup plan, where Miami's backup plan might have been Victor Oladipo, or maybe it was just part two of the plan and part one never happened, but for the Warriors, their backup plan, I think, was just you say, screw it, we'll hold on to Kelly Oubre and just roll the dice this summer.
Yeah, that's interesting. What's just for my own edification, what is the James Wiseman experience like there? Because I just see like he gets an awful lot of crap his way from fans and stuff like that, and I wonder if you could provide some kind of context for my listeners.
The fans have LaMelo Ball related buyer's remorse over James Wiseman.
Oh, is that what it is?
And you look at what LaMelo was doing in Charlotte, or was doing in Charlotte before the broken wrist, with all the ball movement and the exciting plays and stuff like that. And with Wiseman, it's like, all right, well, he kind of looks like a stiff out there. He doesn't really know what he's doing. And it's true. He has no idea what he's doing. But he's also 19, just turned 20 today, actually. And he's played all of, you know, after high school, played three games in college, and that was it until he was the opening day starter. And so, of course, he was overwhelmed. And I would also argue this. It's not a great situation for him, where LaMelo Ball gets to do whatever he wants in Charlotte and run the show and get as many shots as he wants and as many minutes as he wants, and you kind of tailor the offense around him. James Wiseman is walking into a spot where, you know, guys like Zaza Pachulia were playing center, and the offense was based on guys playing center like Zaza Pachulia did. And Steve Kerr has had to grow with Wiseman, figure out what he can and cannot do, and Wiseman's had to grow with Steve Kerr and Steph Curry and Draymond Green and all these guys. And I think if you had Wiseman just playing straight high pick and roll in Charlotte, for example, he'd be averaging, you know, 18 points and 9 rebounds a game. And if the Warriors would have taken LaMelo Ball, he'd be coming off the bench playing, you know, 15 minutes a game and maybe struggling to adapt to a more complex system. And Warriors fans would be doing the same thing, where they would be like, you know what?
Absolutely.
And so, look, I'm not saying that Wiseman was absolutely the right pick, and maybe the, you know, LaMelo Ball ends up being the superior player long term. I mean, there's a greater chance that that's the case, but I think ultimately that's the Warriors fan experience is, oh man, we could have had that guy doing those things. Where no, you could have had that guy, but probably not doing those things.
You referenced it before, too, and I'm curious, what did you mean about Draymond and being at a different point in his career? Because obviously, now that you're covering the team, like, you get a much more in-depth experience there. Where is his headspace at? Like, where does he view this season, and what does he want to do moving forward for the rest of his career?
He's kind of in that Dwayne Wade phase of, you wanted me to shoot threes, well, how about this? I'll never take them. And that's kind of where he's at. Oh, you want me to score? How about this? I just won't shoot ever. And he's just going to play, make, and defend and coach on the floor and do those things. That's just where he is. I mean, the athleticism isn't where it was. The triple doubles are fewer and further between. I think, you know, going into the season, I said, hey, if he scores 10 points for you, that's icing on the cake. You can't expect that. That's just a bonus. We're at the point where if he scores 5 points, that's the bonus, right? That's the icing on the cake. And so maybe you need a little bit more from Draymond going forward, but that's kind of the part of his career that is still, I think, a net positive, right? He does so many things that are so hard or impossible to replicate that he's a net positive. Yeah. But he's just so clearly athletically just in a different part of his career, right? He was never going to age well athletically, but his mind is such that he could still be an effective player.
Okay, let's talk trades for Draymond to Miami then.
All right, let's do that after the break. But first, let's talk about Built Bar. We've been telling you about Built Bar, the best-tasting protein bar on the market for a while now. Built Bar is the amazing low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber, amazing-tasting protein bar covered in chocolate. And now is the time to find out which Built Bar is best. It is Built Bar Madness. And David, I regret to inform you that Cookie Dough Chunk has somehow advanced to the championship game. It's going to play one of Mint Brownie and Coconut Brownie Chunk. I have no idea how Cookie Dough Chunk made it. It beat Cookies and Cream. It beat
delicious.
Peanut Butter Brownie. It beat Churro Puff. It beat Apple it didn't beat Apple Almond Crisp. But it beat Salted Caramel, which I find hard to believe. I mean, how is it making this far?
Because it is the best amongst a very good field of tasty, you know, protein bars. It's very, very good. I love it. I can't believe Mint Brownie, you know how I feel about it. I can't believe it's advanced this far. Like, my wife says, yeah, clearly it's a Final Four candidate. I'm like, what the hell are you watching? I don't even know what she's talking about. But yeah, Mint Brownie, a delicious combination, I guess, but not to me. I like the cookie dough.
Oh my God.
I know you're taking a strong stand against cookie dough.
Conceptually, yes. I am theoretically anti-cookie dough. You're so close to having a great product. Just put it in the oven. You've got cookies. I just don't understand why you would ever stop short. If you've gone through the trouble of having cookie dough, just go that extra step and have cookies. Cookies are my favorite dessert. But I have no interest in eating cookie dough. I have no interest in it. I think you and I, though, have spent more time about this on this bracket complaining about the two flavors we don't like, and that you just conceptually don't like mint brownie as a concept, and I don't like cookie dough as a concept, but there are some really, really great flavors, and I actually am surprised by how much I like the coconut brownie chunk that may or may not have lost to mint brownie in the Final Four. But I just think there were so many other great flavors that, and cookie dough has no business being in there. But go to BuiltBar.com for yourself to go ahead and vote. You can also do it at bar_built on Twitter. While you're at BuiltBar.com, remember to use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off on your next order. That's LOCKED15, 15, to get 15% off on your next order at BuiltBar.com and check back to see who won today's matchup and who's going to become the best-tasting protein bar, and it better not be cookie dough. Let's also talk about BetOnline, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. The Final Four is starting soon, and I'm not talking about the Built Bar bracket, capping off one of the biggest betting events of the year. And if your bracket is busted, don't worry. You could still get in on the action with BetOnline.ag. BetOnline even covers award shows, TV shows, reality TV, real-time updated odds and props on almost everything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you use the promo code LOCKEDON. Again, head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today, and you're going to get a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit, but only when you use that promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Get more analysis on the top prospects available in this year's NBA Draft with Locked On NBA Draft Podcast, scouting reports, draft rumors, mock drafts, and full coverage of March Madness 4 days a week from credentialed draft experts. Subscribe today and follow Locked On NBA Draft. David, you wanted to talk about Draymond trades. Let's do it.
Well, I mean, I think that he would be a nice fit there alongside Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo. I mean, certainly doesn't fit their window from an age perspective. How old is Draymond now?
32
already? Wow, time sure.
Maybe not. I think that's not right. I think he's 31. Steph's 32.
Okay. Well, either way. So
yeah,
it just seems like it would be a great fit from a defensive standpoint. Like, they're not asking anybody at the four spot to do much other than occasionally stretch the floor and play make. And certainly he brings a higher level to do that than either Trevor Ariza or Jay Crowder or anybody else they've had. So maybe from an offensive standpoint, it's not a perfect fit because he does not bring the shooting acumen that they would prefer out of that position. But just from a vocal presence, a defensive-minded presence, even at this stage of his career, I think they would love to bring somebody like Draymond on there. So, you know, let's talk. What would you want in exchange for a Draymond Green?
He fits the culture for sure. I think you're right, and I'm not doing my best job of GMing here, but I think just offensively it would just crush them, and I just don't think it would work. That said, I really don't know.
Well, the biggest factor that make it not going to happen is Rich Paul. So, I mean, he's represented by Rich Paul. It's not going to happen anyway. So,
I mean,
it's all theoretical.
I think a swap involving something about Goran Dragic coming back to the Warriors, that would probably be the part where they start. I just don't see it happening, because Goran Dragic would be like the ideal sixth man for this Warriors team. But I don't, and maybe like Precious Achiuwa and Goran Dragic, and then you have a conversation. But I don't see it. I don't see it happening. Are there any other trades that can happen between these two teams? Warriors fans always want to know, is an Andre Iguodala reunion in the works? And I have maintained that probably not, at least not soon. And if it does happen, it probably won't happen until he becomes a free agent. And if he does return, it's going to be in a much different kind of role than Warriors fans were accustomed to seeing. Can you explain to Warriors fans, or at least just kind of describe what it is that Andre Iguodala has brought to the table for Miami? He's been a good player, but I just don't think he's what Warriors fans remember him being.
No, he's certainly not. He's lost a slight step defensively. He's playing like small ball five in some lineups at this point. You know, he's being put in a position probably not capable of maximizing his strengths, whatever they might be at this stage in his career, because they're such a small team in general. Like, Bam is playing extended minutes. They don't have anybody else really to back him up. They lost Myers Leonard. They traded away Kelly Olynyk, et cetera. So there's not like there's a lot of options at the center position, which is why everybody's clamoring for Boogie Cousins to join Miami, which is very strange, and I'm sure gives Warriors fans a hearty laugh. You know, Iguodala, still capable of running the floor, initiating offense. He's a threat from the corner on occasion, but he's still not a consistent shooter and never was and never will be. So, I mean, you get quality minutes in there. Like, everybody loves what he brings to the table. It's probably similar to his impact in, at least off the court, in Golden State. Like, he's beloved in that locker room. He's a mentor, great experience, leader, vocal, in all the right ways. They love him. Jimmy Butler talks about him glowingly. Eric Spoelstra talks about him glowingly. But it's just on the floor, he just doesn't do that much anymore. Like, you can count on him for like a steal per game. He still has that motion where he swipes the ball out of an opponent's hands if he's guarding them in the low block. He's got great timing in that sense. Now, he doesn't have the speed or the burst to close and break up passes or anything like that anymore, but he's still good to force turnovers. He often makes the right decisions when it comes to his passing ability, but Miami shooters haven't been able to capitalize on those passes on most occasions. So, you know, I like having Andre on the team. I like being able to cover him and talk to him. But at the same time, he's just on the floor. He's not a great fit there. I don't think the expectation was ever that he was going to be a huge contributor. And last year, he wound up being relegated to a throw-in, and Jay Crowder wound up being the steal of that trade. At first, it was Iguodala, and then Crowder's being thrown in just to make the salaries work. It wound up flipping the script completely, and Crowder wound up having a huge role, and Iguodala came off the bench and maybe closed, and certain, clutch situations and things of that sort. But overall, he's been fine in Miami. I don't know that we're going to get much out of him next year, too. Like, every year you see a slight decline in one area of his game, and by next season, who knows what's going to be available. Now, he does have a team option. I doubt they'll exercise it, but I wonder if they would in order to include him in a trade for, say, a Draymond Green.
Right. Which kind of leads us to where we're going next. What needs to happen for either of these teams to return to the finals? The Heat were just in the finals in the bubble. It's been since 2019 that the Warriors were in the finals. Both teams have finals aspirations more immediately than long term. I think for the Warriors, it starts with Klay Thompson coming back and building and seeing what he looks like. Number one, can he look anything like he did in 2019? If he could be about 80-90% of what he was in 2019, I think they still have a chance if they can, supplement the rest of the roster with the right things, go get some more depth. I think Jordan Poole and James Wiseman, if they can continue to blossom and develop into, bona fide rotation type players, if Andrew Wiggins can continue to settle into his role and play even better next to Klay Thompson and more space on the court, continue to get better defensively, Draymond Green, if he can just hold on to what it is that he has left for a couple more years. And then, like I said, it's just a matter of filling out the bench and all the other, fringe places on the roster. I think the Warriors will at least have a chance to compete in a Western Conference, as loaded as the West is right now. But what about for the Heat?
I mean, they could duplicate last season's run this year. It's harder because they were a team built to stop Milwaukee, and they did so very effectively, and they were able to beat up an Indiana and Boston along the way, and then they got hurt right before matching up against the Lakers. But for this team, the road is tougher because Philadelphia is better. They're a much more well-rounded team. Brooklyn certainly has much more talent. I think they have to stay healthy, and there's a big X factor there with Goran Dragic. Like, his lack of skill at this point and, the age just taking away his impact, an injury from last season too. It's hard to predict exactly what kind of role he'll have. And similarly to what I said before, when you have him playing at his best the way he did in last year's bubble, this is a very, very good team that's I'm not going to say unstoppable, but they're very hard to beat. With Goran being the question mark that he is, it's hard to exactly see where they'll move forward. And we haven't even seen what Victor Oladipo can play. Like, I'm high on Oladipo's presence from a defensive standpoint, and I think offensively he's going to fit so well there now that he's a third scoring option on this team, or maybe a second scoring option, alongside Bam Adebayo, second to Jimmy Butler. If he fits in as well as I expect him to, they'll be a very good team. I don't know that they can knock off Brooklyn, although I would say that the Nets are probably their toughest competition. Maybe a slight edge to the Bucks as well. Overall, I'd like Miami's chances of being able to duplicate it. As far as next season, who knows? They're going to have to continue to get more development. If they can trade another player or acquire another player via trade, and if they can get more development from Tyler Hero, if Duncan Robinson continues to diversify his game, if Jimmy Butler can stay away from injury, these kinds of things all matter as he's getting older and older and his minutes keep, ticking up. It's hard to see what he's going to be down the road. But for now, you've got a 2 or 3 years left of his contract where you want to maximize that opportunity. And it's, that window is very, very short in the NBA.
I think both of these teams, as much as I love watching Steph Curry and I love watching the Heat in general, I think both of these teams are probably a year away from making legit finals runs again, just because
nobody saw it last year, though, for Miami.
Yeah, no, you're right. But I think for the Warriors, you're dealing with injuries, and they were hit by COVID protocols a little bit more recently in Miami. For Miami, coming off of a short offseason, injuries, things like that, they never really could have put it together. And now, yeah, maybe they put it together at the exact right time and make a kind of run. I just think that the odds are stacked against them and that they are due. Of all the contenders that we're talking about, the Heat are the only one with cap space. And so I think that, if you're asking me if their chances are better this year or next year, I think their chances are actually better the next year to make another finals run, because you know that they're going to improve the roster somehow. You just know that that's going to be the case. And obviously with the Warriors, they're going to be improved just by Klay Thompson coming back, and I think they'll make other improvements as well. And so I like both of these teams' chances next year more than this year, and who knows, maybe they meet in the finals next year and we have a much more interesting podcast than we do right now. But I think that will do it for us today, David. Thanks for joining me. I look forward to talking to you next Tuesday on Locked On NBA. As far as Locked On Heat and Locked On Warriors goes, remember to subscribe, follow on for all new episodes of both podcasts, wherever you get podcasts. And thanks for listening.